Welcome. I'm Alan Wolf, the director of the Wassey Center for Religion and Public Life at Boston College. And today it's to discuss America's obligations to Iraq. As I'm sure you all know, tomorrow is the fifth anniversary of the sending of American troops into Iraq. The war continues 5 years after it was started. We are not here to discuss, or at least it's my expectation that we're not here to discuss so much the politics of the war. We're not here to discuss the military strategy that ought to be employed in the war. We're here to discuss the huge moral questions that have followed from our involvement in this part of the world. We have been in Iraq for 5 years. We don't know how much longer we'll be there. But the question of what we owe the Iraqis is a question that will be dominant in our political and religious and moral lives for the foreseeable future. It's a question that all serious thinkers ought to be concerned about. And fortunately for us, three of the most serious thinkers in the world to address these questions are here with us today at Boston College to share their thoughts on this issue and to stimulate public discussion about it. Each speaker will speak for 10 to 15 minutes in the hopes that we can then have questions from the audience and discussion among the panelists. Let me introduce them in alphabetical order, each one, and then begin. Andrew Bacevich is professor of history and international relations at Boston University. He is a graduate of the U.S. Military Academy and received his doctorate in American diplomatic history from Princeton. Before joining the BU faculty, he taught at West Point and Johns Hopkins. He's the author of a number of important and significant books, including The New American Militarism, How Americans Are Seduced by War, and American Empire, The Realities and Consequences of U.S. Diplomacy. Professor Bacevich is also a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. Reverend J. Brian Hare is Parker Gilbert Montgomery Professor of the Practice of Religion and Public Life at the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard. He's also the Secretary for Social Services in the Archdiocese of Boston. Prior to assuming these positions, Father Hare served as President and CEO of Catholic Charities USA. Before that, he served on the staff of the U.S. Catholic Congress of Bishops in Washington and on the faculty of Georgetown University. He has also served as Dean of the Harvard Divinity School and was named a MacArthur Fellow in 1984. The Reverend Paul W. McNellis, S.J., is a member of the Philosophy Department at Boston College, where he has been teaching in the Perspectives Program since 2000. He was formerly director of the Political Philosophy Program at the Pontifical Gregorian University in Rome. Father McNellis completed his undergraduate degree in Asian Studies at Cornell University, holds additional degrees from Fordham and the Gregorian University, and a PhD in philosophy from Boston College. Before entering the Society of Jesus in 1977, he worked as a journalist in Vietnam and with Catholic Relief Services in Cambodia. It's just an enormously great honor to be able to introduce these three distinguished Americans. And Andrew Bacevich, we'll begin with you. No? Father Hare. I'm sorry. We'll begin with you.
I mean, I'll go first.
There you go. All right.
Thank you, Alan, very much. Let me begin by expressing my appreciation. It's always a delight to come back to Boston College. You're always invited back for interesting things to do, not necessarily easy to think about, but interesting things to do. And therefore, I am grateful to serve on a panel with two colleagues that I know and respect. In addressing the question of the title of the panel, I want to move in three steps. I want to say something about the way this question is being asked tonight. I want to examine then two choices about Iraq, and then I want to examine the question about making a choice in light of the obligations we have. Let me begin by saying something about the way the question is asked. It is the right question to ask, but it is not the way the question is being asked most of the time in the U.S. debate about Iraq. If you listen to the way the question is being asked, it often follows the way that questions are often asked in terms of foreign policy, namely our interests, our security, our sense of ourselves, our either initial decision to enter or our decision to decide what to do in light of the decision to enter Iraq. All of those questions are relevant, and I may spill over on them more than Alan indicated we might, for I tend to think about ethics as it's embedded in political and strategic choices and think you have to deal with them in a kind of dialectical fashion. But I think an enormous public service is fulfilled by forcing us to ask the question, what is our obligation now in Iraq in light of where it has been? It is a question that I think arises because we have created obligations for ourselves in Iraq. In other words, our obligations to Iraqis existed before the invasion of Iraq in 2003, because if you think of Catholic moral vision, we have obligations to the human family as a whole, and the Iraqis had specific reasons to lay claim on obligations of others, human rights questions, for example. But having invaded Iraq in 2003, I think we have created obligations for ourselves that go beyond what existed at that time. If you ask the question, what obligations we have created, I think you then have to spend some time thinking about the last 5 years and then thinking about the future. And so it is necessary, I think, to examine two sets of choices about Iraq. One, the choices that were made in 2003 that brought us to where we are today, and now choices that we make in light of our existing obligations and our existing capability to fulfill those obligations. The Iraqi decision of 2003, I think whether one looks at it in political strategic terms or whether one looks at it primarily in terms of the focus of this panel, namely the moral content of the choices we made, I think the decision to invade Iraq was, as one of my colleagues at Harvard called it, an unnecessary war. That is to say, it was a war sometimes called of choice, a war not imposed upon us by the conditions of the world, but a war undertaken as a matter of choice. In order to illustrate that, I think it is best to distinguish it from, for example, from the war in Afghanistan. In my view, the war in Afghanistan arose from an unjustified attack across an international border, namely our own, an attack aimed at civilians that killed large numbers of civilians in this country. Whether one thinks of international law or thinks of classical just war doctrine, there was a right to respond to that attack. And that right to respond, I think, is what was undertaken in Afghanistan. So I would describe Afghanistan as a necessary war, necessary to respond, necessary to prevent further attacks of that kind. The decision to expand beyond Iraq into what was called a war on terror was another step. Again, I think you can make an argument that given the shape of the world today and given the possibility of terrorist attack, there is a responsibility to think about international security, international order, and our own security as a nation to say that there needed to be some response to what is conceived of as transnational terrorism in the world today. So on those two counts, I think there were moral rights to undertake a response. But I do think the decision to invade Iraq from a political strategic point of view did not contribute to the response to the war on terror, and from the point of view that war ought to be a necessity and not an option, I think it lacked justification. That leads us to where we are today, 5 years later, with the war having been pursued for 5 years. The decision that we face is shaped by, in part, the obligations we have created. It is also shaped by our capacity to respond to those obligations. That is to say, what we bring to the war in Iraq or what we bring to Iraq in terms of our capabilities. So, having affirmed that you have stated the right question, let me use a formal moral proposition. I think we have a deontological duty, that is to say, a strict duty that needs fulfillment to respond to the created obligations that we have shaped by our participation in Iraq. I think our determination of how we should fulfill those obligations it yields a more consequentialist style of reasoning. We ought to look at what we are capable of doing effectively, and we ought to ask the question what we can bring to the welfare of the Iraqi people. The definition of what obligations we have incurred, there was massive destruction carried out by, in part by a chosen strategy in the war, shock and awe. Secondly, there was the removal of a dictator, which one could clearly appreciate, but not necessarily conclude that there was an obligation to go to war to remove him. Thirdly, there has been, of course, the devastation of the social and economic fabric of Iraq. Fourthly, perhaps not something that we caused, if you will, but there was a latent sectarian complexity to Iraq that may not have been appreciated at the outset, but has now been let loose and is part of the framing of the obligations we have. So we have obligations that relate to Iraqi security, Iraqi welfare, Iraqi political structure, and very importantly, obligations to Iraqi Iraqis who have been driven from Iraq and now are refugees throughout the Middle East and in other places. Multidimensional obligations that arise, I think, out of the war. How should we fulfill these obligations? There are a series of propositions or proposals for what we should do now looking toward the future. Let me simply remind you of four to illustrate the different views of what we ought to do in Iraq. These views don't always consider our obligations to Iraqis. They are often shaped, as I said at the outset, solely in terms of our welfare, our capacities, our resources, and therefore at each point they need to be broadened. But there have been four broad proposals about what the United States should now do in Iraq. The Bush administration's proposal, which most recently has taken the form of expanding our military presence, includes a conception of a very long-term relationship with Iraq. And so there are presently discussions going on to tie us to through diplomatic obligations to the Iraqi government over the long term. Secondly, there are radically different proposals, for example, proposed by my colleague at Harvard, Stanley Hoffman, who argues that we should leave Iraq immediately. He does conceive of it in terms of obligations to Iraqis, and his argument has been that we cause more harm than good. Thirdly, the Iraq Study Group, a study that I've used only partially, but the Iraq Study Group essentially says that we best fulfill our obligations, and it was cast primarily in terms of ourselves, by a limited presence in Iraq leading to, if not immediate exit, a short-term exit. And then finally, a fourth proposal that said that the best thing we could do for Iraq and Iraqis is to help them set up a federal system of government. It does seem to me that none of these proposals give a complete guidance to how we could fulfill our obligations to Iraq. I think there is at least empirical evidence that the immediate security situation is better than it has been over much of the last 5 years. I think even if one opposed the initial decision to go to war as I did, one needs to admit a change somewhat in the security situation. I think the Hoffman proposal is not compelling at the present time because I think we now play a role in the country, at least at the level of security, where one can't argue that the only thing we do is to cause problems. The Iraq Study Group, it seemed to me, was a multidimensional proposal that did not necessarily either tell us a lot about what we should do vis-a-vis the rights of the Iraqis, although it tried to expand the policy conception of how we could most usefully participate in Iraq, beyond security questions to diplomatic questions. And the Biden proposal, it does seem to me, may in fact be outsiders making decisions for Iraqis that they better make for themselves. So what do I propose for fulfilling our obligations to the Iraqis, both in terms of kinds of obligations and what we are capable of? I would make an argument that at the present time, as opposed to much of the past 5 years, we now do hold a fairly significant position in terms of maintaining a certain basic security. It is clearly not ideal in any sense of the term. Iraqis are killed every single day. Americans are killed maybe not every day, but are killed often. And yet, it does seem to me that security is the fundamental step that Iraq must have, and there is a positive role at the present time for American forces. Beyond provision of security, I am not sure that the United States has a great deal to offer in a hands-on way in Iraq. Because when you move beyond security to the political diplomatic front, once again, an occupying power, which is what we have effectively been, an occupying power is usually not necessarily well received in terms of a people making political decisions for their future. The Iraqis do need political help. I'm not at all sure the United States ought to be the lead on that question. Thirdly, in terms of the rebuilding of the country and the stabilization of the country, we have an immediate capability of financial resources. Again, I'm not at all sure that having been the leading edge of the military argument and even thinking of a continued military presence for the short to middle range, I'm not sure you combine that usefully with rebuilding. And finally, one of the reasons why I do not think that you can move from our admitted role, as I would argue it, in playing a useful role on security, I do not think you can extend that very far into the future, since there are religious and cultural reasons, along with the political, that the Iraqis have to make for themselves. And I do not think maintaining a large-scale American presence in a Muslim country of a different culture has much future to it. So I see a limited short- to middle-range role of guaranteeing security and then, as we did in Bosnia, finding an international presence when the security has reached a certain level that can fulfill an effective policing level. Funding rebuilding is a legitimate and necessary obligation, but not doing it, and trying to solve the political, religious, and cultural questions, I think the last 5 years have demonstrated are way beyond our capability.
Professor Basevich.
Well, it's a great honor to be able to participate in this event. I would like to be able to tell you that at BU, where I teach, an event like this would draw a crowd like this, but it wouldn't. And I think it really speaks well of this institution that you turn out in such numbers. Now, my beat is not philosophy. My beat is not theology. I study and write about contemporary U.S. foreign policy. And I tend to view international politics through the lens of realism. And as a realist, I believe that in international politics, moral considerations simply do not determine policy. Interest determine policy. And one might wish that it were otherwise, but wishing won't make it so. To the extent that statesmen have moral obligations, it seems to me that their primary moral obligation is to the people that they govern and the people that they serve. When the President of the United States takes office, he, maybe she, swears an oath and the oath is to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. The Constitution of the United States is a compact created a couple centuries ago for the express purpose of providing for the well-being of the American people. The President does not take an oath to concern himself or herself with the well-being of Iraqis or Israelis or Palestinians or even Canadians. Now, we are this week marking the fifth anniversary of the Iraq War. In my judgment, the chief moral obligation of the President of the United States, this President and of the next President, with respect to that war, is quite clear. To the extent that the continuation of the Iraq War serves the well-being of the American people, then the President should continue that war. To the extent that the continuation of the Iraq War is at odds with the well-being of the American people, then the President should terminate our involvement in that war. My own view is that the war from the outset was, as Father Hare said, absolutely unnecessary, utterly misguided, and certainly has been mismanaged. And the events of the past 5 years have really served to affirm that judgment, even as the conduct of the war has done a massive harm to our nation, whether in terms of lives lost, lives destroyed, families disrupted, power squandered, money wasted, opportunities overlooked because we are preoccupied with this unnecessary and misguided war. Therefore, I believe that the President's moral obligation is to end the war, or at least end U.S. combat involvement in the war. But to emphasize, the President's principal moral obligation in this regard is defined in relation to the polity that the President has sworn to serve. That's us. Or to turn the point around, we are under no moral obligation to others, to the people of Iraq in this case, to continue the war unless our own interests are also served by doing so. Now, over the course of the past 5 years, while we have conducted this unnecessary and misguided and mismanaged war, we have, as a nation, inflicted enormous harm on the people of Iraq. Measured chiefly in terms of non-combatant casualties, people killed, people maimed, but also measured in terms of large numbers of people who are displaced, either internal refugees within Iraq or refugees who have been forced to flee and tend to reside in places like Syria and Jordan. Now, observers, most of them biased, I suspect, argue about the actual numbers involved here, but the numbers are clearly very large. It's beyond question that we have caused the deaths of tens of thousands of Iraqi civilians. And it's beyond question that there are at least somewhere in the order of 2 to 2.5 million refugees out of a country the total population of which was 25 million. Now, one might argue that we have a moral obligation to the individuals whom we have harmed as a result of this unnecessary and misguided war. And I'm making a distinction here, a moral obligation to those individuals, not a moral obligation to the Iraqi nation state, whose existence, I think, is actually a debatable proposition. And I'm willing to accept that argument about a moral obligation to the individuals that we have harmed. And indeed, even if the next president terminates our involvement in the war, we certainly cannot simply disregard, turn our backs on the wreckage that has been caused by our involvement. But I would insist that the obligation here is to the people that we have harmed, not to the Iraqi nation state. And acquitting that obligation should involve practical steps that would try to repair the damage that we have actually done. And it seems to me that if you just think a little bit about it, it's evident that there are practical steps that actually could be undertaken. We could, as a nation, as a people, for example, cover the costs of sheltering and feeding those 2 to 2.5 million refugees living in squalor in camps in places like Syria and Jordan. We could provide for the medical needs of this 2 to 2.5 million people. We could provide for the education of their children. Now, this would entail the commitment of many, many billions of dollars. But we could acquit our moral obligation. Or, alternatively, we could admit those 2 to 2.5 million refugees to the United States of America, providing them with an opportunity to live in relative peace and security, and perhaps a chance to rebuild their lives here, to enjoy the opportunities that we have. This would also require billions of dollars. It would also certainly require a willingness on the part of our fellow citizens to accommodate a great influx of people who would probably differ substantially from most of the rest of us in terms of culture, in terms of religious beliefs, in terms of background. Or we could, perhaps, begin now to set aside the funding necessary to undertake the reconstruction of Iraq if and when the violence there ever actually comes to an end. I mean, the war is costing us something on the order of $3 billion per week. One might, let's say, propose a fund of, let's say, 3 years' worth of war spending. That would be somewhere in the vicinity of $500 billion. $500 billion could probably go a long way at some future date toward rebuilding bridges, roads, schools, hospitals, the infrastructure that would be required to try to create some semblance of normalcy in a post-war Iraq. We could do practical things. But as a practical matter, you know and I know that we won't. We won't set aside $500 billion to acquit our moral obligation to the Iraqi people. We won't admit 2 to 2.5 million Iraqi refugees into this country to give them sanctuary. And we won't undertake to expend the many billions of dollars that even would be required to respond to the needs of the refugees who have left the country. Which is why, regrettably, sadly, I come back to the point where I began, which is to say that in international politics, moral considerations do not determine policy. They figure at best on the margins of policy. Thank you very much.